Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. It is the day of presidential debate number two, town hall style. Jim, I don't know what crazy questions you're predicting. Yesterday you mentioned ponytail guy from the 1992 campaign. I'm guessing there'll be a couple zingers in there waiting for one or the other. My guess is Mitt Romney will probably be the one getting the difficult question, but we'll see. And we'll find out whether, as you point out in the jolt, we get the Joe Biden version of President Obama or something else. But clearly he's the one who everyone's going to be watching tonight. And as you point out, as long as he doesn't drool, he's probably going to be declared the winner by most of the press.
Yeah, my expectation is that the opening statement for President Obama will go something like this. Thank you very much for having me here. I'd like to thank the commission. I'd like to thank the audience for coming here tonight and all the viewers at home. When my opponent said he only wanted to be president of 53% of America, 47% is going to come up early and often. And, hopefully President, again, Freudian slip, hopefully Governor Romney will be able to point out that I just terribly screwed up and I shouldn't have said that. And it was a foolish thing to say, or he's got some sort of qualified defense to make that I hate seeing people dependent upon government. I believe I want to see Americans strong and independent. You know, one way or the other, he'll be able to play that. I think the pressure really is on Obama tonight. I mean, Romney just basically has to go out, do very, similar to what he did last week or 2 weeks ago, I guess I should say, and maybe a little more empathy. I feel your pain. Make sure to make eye contact with the people questioning. And I think he's, he's in the driver's seat at this point, believe it or not. He just has to avoid any major gaffes and, be who he is. And I think we saw last time that he's capable of putting in exceptionally strong debate performances. And it'll be fascinating to see what happens with Obama with pressure on him.
Yeah. My advice to Mitt is remember the names of the people asking the questions and use them once in a while, not like every sentence, but every once in a while. And the other thing is I have a feeling, in addition to the 47%, Obama might be taking a page out of the Al Gore book and end his statement on every question with a question to Mitt Romney. That's what Gore used to do to George W. Bush, trying to throw him off his message. And obviously that didn't ultimately work, but it could be one different
stretch. Technically against the rules, Greg.
Oh, really?
I don't know if I had in the jolt today all the different rules they have, including the fact they are not allowed to point or discuss anyone in the audience of the debate other than, I assume, the questioner and their spouses and members of their family, meaning that if they have any special guests, there's no human props, allegedly. So on paper, neither Romney nor Obama should be asking questions of each other. Now, if either one of these guys thinks they have a great opportunity there, they may feel it's worthwhile to break the rules and hope that either Candy Crowley doesn't notice or that, nobody cares that they're breaking the rules.
Could be. It'd be very interesting tonight to see how it unfolds. Hopefully it's somewhere close to the way it was 2 weeks ago. I'll take anywhere close to that compared to where the race stood 2 weeks ago. Speaking of how the race has changed since the first debate, Jim, you talked about it in the jolt today. The new swing state polls out, an aggregate of, I think it's, 11 different swing states? Anything ranging from things that are pretty safe Republican to pretty safe Democrat at this point. And they don't break it down state by state, but Mitt Romney up 51 to 46. That's a pretty nice spread considering where things were before. And even in a daily cost poll, he's up nationwide 50 to 46. So it's more than a bump, it looks like. Let's just hope he can keep it going.
Yeah, it's worth noting that Greg Sargent of the illustrious Washington Post, who I had a not-so-polite rejoinder to yesterday, he's among the folks who thinks that the Romney surge is overstated, that this is illusory, that it's not really – that Romney's not really doing that much better, and Obama hasn't really lost that much ground. Wonder what he thinks of that, the PPP poll. Each morning we're getting some new bit of good news from pollsters, which is not something you and I are used to seeing, Greg. I think a couple things are at factor here. The first is pollsters are now using likely voter screens. And I think we were learning that, look, registered voter polls don't really tell you all that much about what the electorate is going to look like on election day. There are a whole bunch of folks who, A, aren't going, are registered to vote but aren't going to vote. And the other thing which is worth keeping in mind is a lot of people say they're going to vote and they don't. Nobody wants to admit to somebody on the phone. They kind of say, oh, yes, I'm definitely going to vote. And, they won't necessarily show up. These folks are disproportionately Democrats, or at least they say that they're Democrats. I guess if you don't vote very often, it raises the question of whether you really are a member of a party. As for the PPP poll, looks great this morning. The swing state poll, I pointed out that, look, You break it down, it comes out to about 72 voters in each swing state, which is not a terribly big sample. I think that's kind of gives you the general trend. What really had people doing backflips yesterday was the fact that the gender gap is now split. There is no gender gap anymore, at least according to this one in these swing states. The Obama campaign felt the need to issue a long release saying, oh, pish-posh, nonsense, bollocks on stilts, insisting that, no, they still have they're confident they have a huge advantage amongst women, et cetera, et cetera. And then just one more log to throw on the pile of this. NPR had a study of rural counties in swing states. And these are counties that are, you know, pretty heavily Republican, but, you know, Romney's winning 59-39, so, or 59-37. So right where he wants to be in there, win the rurals by wide margins, do pretty good in the suburbans, and don't lose the urban districts by huge margins. And, you know, Romney should be in very good shape in these swing states.
On to Martini number two now. And the bad news is the leading from behind is just reaching epic proportions here, Jim. We heard from Joe Biden mystically last week during the vice presidential debate that there was never any request that he ever knew about for additional security in Benghazi. And apparently the campaign has decided to seize on that new line. And now Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is out there basically saying the buck never got to President Obama because the buck stops with her. Here's a couple of clips from Hillary Clinton with CNN.
I take responsibility. I'm in charge of the State Department, 60,000 plus people all over the world, 275 posts. The president and the vice president certainly wouldn't be knowledgeable about specific decisions that are made by security professionals.
Well, do you think you got wrong intelligence then?
I'm not going to get into the blame game either about what we don't fully yet know from our own investigation.
So we still don't know what happened here, allegedly. Jim, it's got to be rough for Hillary Clinton. She didn't win the Democratic nomination, but apparently she still gets the 3 a.m. phone calls.
Yeah, I like the best response I heard on this one was that Hillary Clinton checked the White House voicemail, and there was a 3 a.m. phone call from 5 weeks ago that she finally decided to respond to today. So it's nice to see somebody in the administration coming out and saying, I take responsibility for this. And you can make an argument that the specific decisions about security at the Benghazi consulate are obviously that of the State Department. And thus, Hillary is the one who is most directly of the, you know, high level members of the administration, most directly responsible for this. But I'm still kind of curious about whether any of the gathering potential threats to U.S. Embassies abroad was mentioned in the PDBs. Was there any indication of this? At any point, did Obama inquire about security at our embassies, particularly with the 9/11 anniversary coming up? Was he briefed or informed about the likelihood of Al Qaeda in North Africa becoming we just don't know so many of these things. And one of the things that I had been one of those guys who said Obama getting the PDB in written form is not a big deal. Different presidents are going to prefer it in different ways. But I've been thinking more and more about it. Look, a president who gets a verbal briefing, preferably with his, you know, his security team around him, you know, each morning, the way Bush used to get this from Tenet. You ask questions, you know, a record is created of everybody in the room, that people remember what is discussed and what is not discussed. When the PDB comes entirely in the written form to the president's iPad, by the way, I was fascinated to learn that. We don't know, did he read it? Did he skim it? Did he kind of, you know, zip through it with the way you use your finger to make the screen go by really fast on your iPads or iPhones? Kind of fascinating to wonder how much of that PDB information got to the president. That, you know, the frightening thought that if important information goes in the PDB, it may not actually get into the president's thinking and influence his thinking and his assessments of these sorts of things. So while it's good to see someone in the administration taking responsibility, I think, you know, the response from John McCain was pointing out, look, if the president was not informed of any of these issues, of a potential deadly threat to our staff overseas, just how much confidence can you have in this president and the team around him? They're basically saying, hey, nobody told me, what am I going to do? Which was, by the way, the exact same explanation that came from Eric Holder on Fast and Furious. There's this pattern of information coming from the bottom, trying to make its way up to the highest levels, and then somehow mysteriously not getting to the highest levels. And then when things go wrong, the people at the top saying, hey, look, I didn't know. Can't blame me. What do you do? You know, which, by the way, is a direct quote pretty much from Joe Biden in that first debate.
Yeah, that was pretty sad. And the look on Paul Ryan's face shows, I think, how most Americans reacted to that explanation. On to Martini number three now, the crazy one. And Jim, we've obviously been talking about the Benghazi situation for over a month now. It's a foreign policy and a governmental crisis. We've clearly chronicled the state of the economy, jobs still not coming back, huge soaring debts. So clearly the number one issue as we head into the final 3 weeks of this campaign is whether or not the pans that the Ryan family helped to clean in an Ohio soup kitchen were actually clean before they washed them. That was the lead story on the Today Show this morning. And apparently, based on some of the photos, the angle of the pool, it looked like they perhaps weren't actually all that dirty. Other witnesses there said they were soiled to some extent. So I'm sure there will be a full-scale investigation of this by the mainstream media.
Yeah, I mean, what makes this crazy is the fact this was the lead story on the Today Show this morning, or at least I am told by folks who are watching it this morning. This is the Sarah Palinization of Paul Ryan. This was the kind of coverage that Palin got. This obsession. Remember, you know, the story of the first shooting wolves from helicopters and, you know, all kinds of you know, crazy stories and things like that. And that's the aim. That is the objective, to make a Republican sound like a freak. The idea that this was the most important one. This is the plastic turkey all over again, which was, in fact, you know, the President Bush had held up a centerpiece at a gathering of the troops in Iraq during Thanksgiving a couple of years ago. The storyline, it was not a plastic turkey. It was not that it was some sort of, you know, giant scam. The president didn't feed the troops plastic turkey or any types of nonsense. But it turned into this, you know, liberal mythology that's kept coming up in column after column and blog post after blog post. The old saying of a lie gets halfway around the world before the truth gets its boots on. Greg, I don't know about you. When you wash the dishes at your house, whether you use a dishwasher or use the sink, are they clean?
When they're done, yeah.
No. Are they Paul Ryan clean? Because, you know, there are a lot of people who like to do sort of clean, you know, kind of iffy. No. You know, Paul Ryan, the same kind of precision he brings to his budget projections and assessments, he brings to cleaning the dishes. So if you want a cleaner America, a spick and span America, this is the vice president for you, ladies and gentlemen.
Very good. Jim, enjoy the debate tonight. I'm sure I'll have plenty to say about it tomorrow. Talk to you then.
I was going to say, no one can complain he's not cleaning up politics. See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us on Wednesday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.